think there's a whole kind of crowd of progressives that kind of thrive on hopelessness. Do you believe that to be true? That they're sort of like, ugh, I knew it was bad, but it's just so bad.
I think it's increasing. And I see it around climate change a fair bit, right?
Sure,
like there's definitely more of a just kind of wallowing in the doom school.
Right.
And there's lots to be very, very frightened about and concerned about. I mean, I'm not a sunny optimist by any means.
No, I didn't. I wasn't.
Yeah. But I guess I just sort of feel like I don't really understand. I completely understand feeling hopeless.
Yeah.
And I completely understand feeling doomy.
Yeah.
I don't totally understand the motivation to tell everyone about it because it is contagious, right?
Sure.
Like we are social beings. So like, you know, if we spread an optimistic message, if we convince other people that there is something that we can do and then they do it, that has an effect on the world, right? We change each other. And if you go around and you have a big platform and you just tell people there's no hope, it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. I had this argument with Chris Hedges ages ago.
Oh my God, that's a heavy conversation, even if it's for 5 minutes.
I mean, this was 2007 because the Shock Doctrine had just come out and we were both at the Miami Book Fair. And I gave a speech, which I did not consider an optimistic speech, about the Shock Doctrine, but I did, I did say that there were things we could do to, try to stop the war and to, to hold these people accountable.
Yeah.
And he said to me backstage, he said, "I don't share your optimism." I said, "It wasn't optimistic. I just said that that all is not lost." And then he listed all the things, the reasons why we were doomed. And, they control the media, they control this, they control that, they have the churches. And I just said, if I felt like that, I'd stay home.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with you.
You're right.
But when you stand up in front of hundreds of people and tell people that, that has an effect on the world,
you know?
So that said, you don't have a responsibility just because you're a great reporter to spread optimism.
Right.
You know, that's a different thing.
But I think knowing
he's not an inspirational speaker,
No. Are there any on the left? I mean, is there someone I don't know about? Is there a leader in our midst that that is spreading the message of optimism and hope and can do?
There are people who are more optimistic. Rebecca, I used to have Rebecca Solnit on. She's good at she wrote Hope in the Dark. She's good at that.
I'm not looking for optimism necessarily, but I found in reading the book that I was wary of the ending because I knew that you were going to have to, not the very ending, the punchline about the other Naomi, But I don't want to do spoilers. You actually have a book where I'm like, I don't want to spoil the end. but I knew that there was going to be some practical kind of, organizing ideas and ways that people can get involved and ways that people can sort of reach out to other humans. The idea that we're all humans, go outside, meet some other humans and do the right thing kind of stuff. I like that. But there was still part of me that's sort of like, I don't know. I guess.
Well, there's also I think unlike my previous books, there's also some kind of homework in terms of the inner work because a lot of this journey for me has been about looking at just how much our individual egos, our individual selves, how much space they take up, how much energy they take up, how much labor they take up. Yeah.
It seems like that's where it all started. I mean, I would assume, it feels like there's a memoir in here. Like this is about as close as you're going to come to a memoir. And it was essentially you addressing yourself in relation to this other Naomi, but also in relation to things you've talked about before, personal branding and what that means, and also the isolation of what capitalism has done to us as individuals. So there you were stranded, wherever you were stranded during COVID. And I think we should sort of, kind of set up the book a little bit because you were having an issue. It really starts with you eventually having an issue with this other Naomi Wolf, who you're confused about. My producer, Brendan, told me about something that happened at Air America. We weren't involved in it, but it had something to do with Sam Cedar, thinking he was booking you and accidentally booking her. It was, you know, it happened for years. This has been happening.
Oh yeah. Oh man. I never heard that story. Well, this is the thing about having a doppelganger is it's fascinating because if you are a person who tries to control themselves in the world, you know, if you're a person with like a high degree of self-consciousness, you're
any person or a public person?
I would think any person who probably cares a little too much about how they are projecting themselves into the world.
Yeah.
Having a doppelganger is really going to challenge that, right? Because somebody else is out there doing things in the world. People think it is you.
Right.
And you just can't do anything about it. So you can polish and you can control and you can be very, very careful in your choice of words and what you wear and what, you know. And I'm a person who I think put a fair amount of work into controlling my public image because it's hard to be a woman in public. And, you know, but also because I had very exhibitionist parents, like, you know, like my parents without those kinds of boundaries. Right.
Right.
So that made me very, like, it made me feel like I had to be the adult around.
Interesting.
You know?
It's sort of like it's like the child of well, obviously this isn't the case, but if you're a child of an alcoholic who's without boundaries and erratic, either you become an alcoholic or you become the control one,
mm-hmm.
the one who tries to control.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have like parents that are way out there, one way or the other.
You must be way out there, Pastor. Over.
I'm high, all right. But not on false drugs. I'm high on the real thing. Powerful gasoline, a clean windshield, and a shoe shine. Over.
He's turning over!
Get thee behind me!
Are you in danger, Pastor?
I'm all right, Roger. Just a little argument with my co-pilot. And guess what, Rog? The little red needle's pointing to E. And while that's always stood for excellent in my book, I guess it means I'm out of gas. You'll have to sing me and my friends, my favorite, hymn 1517.
Either you're going to be like that or you're going to be like, no, I'm going to lock down.
Yeah.
So the idea of the doppelganger, because that's the name of the book, you were able to sort of source it throughout the history of literature, philosophy. You refer to Philip Roth's Operation Shylock a lot. What does it mean to you, you know, as a portal for cultural criticism? How does that work?
Well, it's this recurring literary technique, image, figure. I mean, back to ancient mythology, but in the history of modern literature and film, it just recurs again and again, and it's often a kind of a warning. There's often an uncertainty in doppelganger stories about whether the doppelganger really is a separate person or whether it's just a projection of a kind of unhinged imagination. So that's true. And then it turns out that they aren't real.
Right.
I don't know if you, did you ever see Enemy by Denis Villeneuve?
No.
That's a good doppelganger film that's loosely based on a novel called The Double by Jose Saramago. Uh-huh. And then everybody does adaptations of Dostoevsky's short story, The Double. There was one starring Jesse Eisenberg a few years back, which was really good. And there's that uncertainty. Like, is this another person or is this me? And it ultimately, you either get overtaken by your double or you figure out how to sort of inhabit yourself better, right?
Right.
I think when I started out, I didn't really understand that in the end it was going to be about me. I think I thought, I'm just going to write a book about her. I'm not about her.
She's got it coming.
You know, I thought she was like, you know, a friend of mine put it, that she's like a narrow aperture to look at a bunch of things. And I had wanted to look at different kinds of doublings. Like my first book, No Logo, was about branding, and it was about lifestyle branding, but I wrote it in the 90s, and that was before
social media.
Yeah, so that was before regular people could see themselves as brands. Celebrities, like you know, I was writing about Michael Jordan and Oprah, but I wasn't writing about just like a normal undergrad who
or somebody that can create a fictional version of themselves by just changing a name or creating an avatar.
Exactly, right.
And live in the world.
Well, maybe your mother does want to talk to you, kid. You know, you can't forget that sweet bozo.
Oh, Ernie, this is just a computer.
What? You're too frightened or tired to move. Well, just stand there, and I'll send Deputy
Doppelganger
to get you.
That's right, Deputy
Doppelganger.
I'll wait It'll here okay. and kind of watch you till Dan comes.
Let's go back into the wall. This is stupid. All right, look, listen, Chokehead, this is Worker speaking. Hello.
Hi, open for maintenance alignment.
What have you done?
Good, now let me show you something, Bozo. Detailed dress circuits.
Belt, above, A, below, B.
Below B, okay, close B, close mode.
Oh, my duck, his pants have disappeared. Kid, everybody's watching.
Oh, come on, now watch this. Ego.
Go.
Close artichoke mode.
It's a rainbow. Oh, now what happened to little Artie?
Prepare shift simulfax for human form. Prepare mirror clone.
What are you doing?
Clone me.
Oh, that's I think that's against the rules.
Legal entry.
Clone me, Dr. Memory.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm a Clem.
It's you.
No, Barney, I'm me. That's just a hologram.
Well, kid, you're a wizard, whoever you are.
Well, I'm just trying to get a straight answer to something.
You have violated robot's rules of order and will be asked to leave the future immediately.
Now, you
thank
you.
Talk to me like that. I demand to see Dr. Memory.
Hey, here comes Deputy
Doppelganger.
Now print.
Flip-flop.
A Clem clone, back to the shadows again.
Kid, what have you done?
I think the fact that she's sort of my doppelganger is a lot less interesting than the fact that she is kind of a doppelganger of her former self. Like, she has changed dramatically from the person that people might remember as the author of The Beauty Myth or an advisor to Al Gore in the 2000 election. Now she's joining Steve Bannon in election denial. She did that in the midterm elections. This prominent feminist is now minimizing the U.S. Supreme Court's attacks on abortion rights, saying maybe it's a states' right issue. She takes pictures of her gun.
Ed aims to please, and so does Louise. So don't hide arms, get sidearms at Ames Guns. 30102 East Rhode Island School of Design Terrace in Ukaipa.
Daddy, where can I get a good deal in a Christian atmosphere?
Get the senator back in the bus.
God for Daniel, pesky Redskins. Which way's Goshen?
I'm going down to the bits that I left uptown. I need a fix, 'cause I'm going down. Mother Superior jumped the gun. 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 Mother Superior jumped the gun.
Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my finger on your trigger, I know nobody can do.
She is warning of civil war. I mean, it is a dramatic transformation, and she's not the only one. So many people who I speak to say, you know, sotto voce, like, I can't talk to my brother anymore. I can't talk to my uncle anymore. It's like they're a doppelganger of themselves. So what is happening? Why have so many people taken flight from reality? And I mean, frankly, I think it actually has to do in part what we started talking about, the fact that our shared home is in crisis, the fact that we are experiencing some revelations of some very hard realities to hold about the impacts of our way of life on the ability of our planet to be hospitable to us. That's a big deal. That's going to scramble our senses of self, even if we're not conscious that it's having an effect on us. The racial justice reckonings of this period also, I think, have been a profound identity challenge to white people.
What? Oh, Uncle Tom! You're back!
Uncle Field Marshal Thomas L'Aubry Quadroon, honey! I'm back! And I'm beautiful!
I'm so glad that you're back, Tom!
It's good to have you.
See, there are many, many things that you don't know.
That's right,
everything
Tom,
you know is wrong.
I forgot! You're a free man now.
This is the best part of it.
Oh, no, I ain't, General. I'm expensive. As a professional state now, you've been walking over this kinky old government for over 60 years, and now you plan to pay your puppet tax. Put it right here in the bag.
Blasphemy! I die first.
Hush now. It's a new world, honey. Nobody gwan have to be a slave all the time. No more. We gwan take turns. And guess who's joining in now?
To settlers on these lands. And that is causing some morbid symptoms that I think we're seeing, even if it's not totally conscious.
Well, that's the amazing setup for this, because this woman was a lefty for the most part. I found myself trying to psychoanalyze her through this book. And I think you were a bit too. And at the end, you know, I was at the very end where you kind of reveal that first encounter. You know, I definitely have my ideas of her. But it seemed to me that as a doppelganger that is going to take you on this journey through why fascism is happening globally because of late stage capitalism, you know, that you couldn't have picked this is like a gift.
Gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. And that it's fascinating.
Because when I started, you know, I have this quote that is a bit of a kind of a recurrent mantra in the book from Philip Roth's Operation Shylock, just to bring another Jew into the conversation, which is, you know, Operation Shylock. I mean, every Philip Roth novel is a doppelganger novel. He always has a protagonist who is clearly...
You think it might be him,
some version of him. Zuckerberg, you know, I mean... But in Shylock, he goes all the way, and the main character of the book is named Philip Roth, who has written all of Philip Roth's books, who has a doppelganger who is also calling himself Philip Roth and who's running around Jerusalem causing all kinds of mayhem. And Roth writes, it's too ridiculous to take seriously and too serious to be ridiculous. And so when I started this little investigation, which was supposed to just be like maybe an essay that I was going to pitch to the New Yorker, and then it just kept getting more and more. It was more ridiculous than serious, you know. But then when Bannon and Carlson and the rest of them really decided that she was the key to the COVID moms, right?
Yeah.
To get these sort of angry, like suburban moms. Bannon says this explicitly. All these moms who are listening to Naomi Wolf, who were upset about closed schools, who were upset about vaccine mandates, who were tired of being, you know, mocked as Karens, they saw them as the key to getting the white women suburban votes that they haven't been able to get, which is really their key to getting the White House back.
Yeah.
So it started to get more and more serious. Then she got a gun. Then she started taking pictures of her gun. Then she started posting pictures of her husband, who also has an automatic weapon.
Sure.
And so,
Alex, how are you handling my gun?
With kid gloves, Herr Trigger. I have found the perfect niche for your automatic weapons. Children's television.
Children's television?
Mm-hmm.
Gott und Dammerung! If Adolf
had children's television, we'd all be speaking with funny accents like mine.
It gets better. Development came up with this.
What's this? A box of cereal? Oh, no. Special AK.
Bite-sized assault rifles.
We'll make a cereal killing wunderbar.
Milk.
Jawohl.
Stand back. Better than Snap, Crackle, Pop, huh?
Alex, you genius. You have given me the children of the world.
It is still like, I'm still in the perpetual kind of laugh cry emoji state of like, is this funny? Is it not? But it's more serious than ridiculous now. And I think the closer we get to the 2024 elections, the less we're laughing about the Marjorie Taylor Greens and, you know, the Jewish space lasers, because they've got a hell of a lot of power.
They do, because, and this is sort of like, I think the way we can go through this stuff, you know, because you talk about everything in here. Like, I think you talk about the entire arc of the things that you've been intellectually interested in and interested in as an activist. It's all in here. So we can't go through all of it.
No.